that Yajna Sankirtana Prayajanta Hi Sumegasaha. So we should emphasize more on Sankirtan, and then what is the position of chanting in that japa. Then if the Sumegas are to do the Sankirtan, then why chanting? Or what is the difference and the effect? Please explain.
If we are not having nice chanting ourselves, then the potency will be greatly reduced. Srila Prabhupada explained that as much as possible, once you hear the chanting of the holy names from the lips of the pure devotee, because if one is pure, then the chanting will have a much greater effect. He gave the analogy that milk touched by the lips of a serpent causes poisonous effect. So if we want to purify ourselves so we can chant purely, then we also have to chant very, very nicely. And if we are chanting without offense and chanting purely ourselves, then our congregational chanting will have very, very great potency. Otherwise, the potency will not be so much.
Congregational chanting. Shall we do emphasize more on congregational chanting, or this japa is also required? Because Lord Chaitanya is saying that we have to do congregational chanting.
Both have to be there. But if we are not doing our personal chanting, our 16 rounds every day, then our congregational chanting will not have as much potency. But Srila Prabhupada also explained, he gave the example once when he was typing. He moved his fingers like this over the keyboard and he said, this is also chanting. Our particular service that we do, because it is meant to glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it is also chanting. But at the same time, Srila Prabhupada emphasized that we should do congregational chanting, where we go out in public and we chant so that every living entity can hear the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because by hearing about the name of the Lord, one is able to associate directly with the Supreme Lord. Otherwise, the people in general, they do not have the opportunity to hear about the Lord. You are all very fortunate because you have accepted the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, either directly or through his representatives, and therefore it is our duty to actually go out and distribute the same mercy to others. And one of the best ways to do it is by congregational chanting. You have experience in doing book distribution, and so many people take books, but so many more people do not take them. Those that do, it is their great fortune to accept them, and they're even more fortunate if they pick them up and begin to read them and try to understand them. But simply by going out and distributing the holy name of the Lord by kirtan, sankirtan, anyone and everyone who hears, regardless of the species of life they're in, they receive benefit. Even those living entities in the bodies of trees and birds and plants, they're also receiving the benediction. They cannot read the books, but they are also receiving the benediction of the holy name of the Lord. So this is also a very, very important activity that should be not minimized, but should be engaged in at every opportunity.
Maharaj, sometimes while preaching, some, like in colleges and all, some students directly they ask us question that, have you really lost your taste for materialistic activities like watching movies or for opposite sex? Have you completely lost your attraction for that? And at that time, like if somebody asks us, like, you are chanting for so many years and all, so what should we do? We should be sincere to our minds and answer the real thing, or or just to inspire him to chant, we should say, oh yeah, yeah, I don't have any attractions.
Should we bluff? And should I sit here and recommend that you should all be bluffers? We're trying. We've got the process, and we're following that process. And whatever result we've got, we can say. We don't claim that now I've attained perfection, now I'm perfect. For that matter, even those who are perfect don't claim, now I'm perfect, I'm writing this book because I'm perfect, because I've attained complete realization, because I know everything, because I'm free from all sins and all desires. Kaviraj Goswami says that I'm lower than the worm in the stool and more sinful than Jagai and Madhai. Anyone who takes my name loses all his pious credit. So when such great acharyas are speaking in that way, I don't think it's required for us to get up in front of the students and tell them that we've attained perfection.
They are not devotees to understand the humility or like in which mood.
But they're sharp cookies to understand who's bluffing.
So if we directly tell them that this chanting right now has not affected so much, so they will not take up to chanting.
No, they will. They will. That those, therefore it said, bhajantihi sumedasaha. Those who are a little intelligent will see that everyone else is coming and bluffing and cheating, that yes, I've chanted this mantra, and now I've understood that I'm God. Huh? Now I've become this, now I've become that. And here's this fellow who's coming, and he's not claiming that I'm the greatest, I'm the Supreme Personality of Godhead, I'm this, I'm that. He's just saying that I'm following the right process, authorized process, and whatever I was, I'm getting some improvement. And you can say, according to your own experience, what that improvement is. And those who are sumedasaha, those who are little intelligent, they'll appreciate that here's a genuine person. And if they're not sumedha, so what can you do? Chant Hare Krishna and let them hear and they'll become sumedha.
Maharaj, the goal of a Krishna conscious philosophy is at the time of death, by chanting Hare Krishna, going back to Godhead, as far as I know. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says that mama janmani janmanishvare bhautat bhakti aitu kitvai. So what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually mean by saying this? Does he want to say that don't go back to Godhead and just preach the glories of Krishna consciousness?
Yes. A pure devotee has no desire other than to serve Krishna, and one can serve Krishna in any position. So he doesn't make any distinction really between heaven or hell or liberation, because in any condition he can serve the Lord and be satisfied. But we also should not imitate someone who's on the platform of pure devotion. Like one disciple of Srila Prabhupada said to him, that Srila Prabhupada, I just want to serve you birth after birth. And Srila Prabhupada replied, don't make me take birth again to accept your service. So different devotees are in different stages. And Srila Prabhupada said that someone who's influenced by the mode of ignorance will think, I'm the only devotee. Everyone else is nonsense. Someone who's influenced by the mode of passion will think, I want to be recognized as the best devotee. I want to become the best devotee, and I want to be recognized as being the best devotee. Someone in the mode of goodness will think, I want to go back to Godhead. And someone who's transcendentally situated will think, I just want to serve Krishna. So we should not act on the desire for liberation. We should just act on the desire for service. And liberation will come automatically by the grace of the Lord.
Yesterday, day before yesterday, Mira Road, I was there and I heard Bhagavatam morning class, and you made a statement, she said it, that your mind will find out some way so that you can be miserable. And really that statement is, We are finding out the excuse throughout the world. This thing is better, that thing is better. Will you please just explain how our mind will make us miserable?
Do you need an explanation? The mind is the worst enemy if it is not engaged in remembering Krishna and service to Krishna. Krishna has said this. Krishna has created the mind. Who knows how the mind works better than the manufacturer of the mind? Krishna has explained, for the mind that is not engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord, that mind is your worst enemy. Therefore, whatever situation you may be in, the nature of the mind is always to look for pleasure. But because it can never be satisfied, it always finds a reason to be miserable. Even if you have everything you ever wanted, your mind will still find some excuse to cause you misery. How many have that experience? How many never had that experience? Krishna has explained so nicely, and it is the absolute truth. So we should accept. Man mana bhava mad bhakto madhya jim nandamaskaru mam evaisha shi shatyante prati jani priyoshime. Always think of me, worship me, offer your homage unto me. In this way you will come to me without fail. And in Krishna there is eternal joy. Somehow or other, the purpose of life is to keep the mind in the service of Krishna. By hearing, by chanting, there are 9 processes of devotional service. And each of them help us to keep our mind always connected to Krishna. And this is the sign of the intelligence. The mind is always roaming and scanning for some object to enjoy and for some reason to be miserable. But the nature of the good intelligence is to always keep dragging the mind back to Krishna. And the prominent way of doing so is by chanting his holy names.
Krishna, 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 Chaito Dharpana Marajanam Bhavamahada Vagni Nirvapanam. The chanting of Krishna's name cleanses the mirror of the mind of all of these tendencies for hankering and lamentation. Chant Hare Krishna and be happy. Hare Krishna.
Bhagavad Gita as it is, in the 12th chapter, page number 626, in the translation, Prabhupada writes, by meditation, one can be able to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead by a gradual process. There are processes which make one understand that one himself is the Supreme, and that sort of meditation is preferred if one is unable to engage in devotional service. Can you please explain this sentence?
No. Yeah, I can't.
There's a process called ahangrahopasana. By that meditation, one thinks that aham brahmasmi. What is Brahma? Brahma means the absolute. So, tattamasi, you're also absolute. You're not different from the absolute. So in that sense, in that way, he comes to understand at least that I'm not this body. I'm something absolute. The body is relative, mind is relative, intelligence is relative. I'm not any of these things. I'm absolute. Aham brahmasmi. I'm the absolute. We know that we're qualitatively one with the supreme absolute and quantitatively different. So in the beginning, one doesn't even know that there's an absolute. At least this way he becomes half right. That I'm one with the absolute. So he's halfway there. Now he has to understand that I'm also different from the absolute. When he gets that understanding, then he becomes eligible for devotional service. Is that okay?
Maharaj, what I understand is, in this process of Hare Krishna movement, one is required to give service to Krishna. Now, what is a better, a superior form of service? Serving as a grahastha or giving up everything and joining a temple and continuing service?
Actually, devotional service is on the transcendental platform. And Krishna sees no difference in the activity performed by anyone and any species. He does not see that one is an American, one is Indian, one is male, one is female, one is demigod, one is in the body of a tree. It doesn't matter what ashram we are in and what varna we are in. Because Krishna, he needs nothing from us. He needs nothing. He's the absolute. He already possesses everything. There's nothing that we can offer to Krishna except one thing. And there's only one thing that Krishna wants from each and every one of us, and that is our love. This is the only thing that we have in our possession that we can give to Krishna. And so if we somehow or another try to serve Krishna through his pure devotee with great love and with great attention, then this is very pleasing to Krishna. And he accepts it no matter what species of life one is in, no matter what ashram or varna one is serving in. We simply have to try to serve Krishna with our love. And if we can do this, then Krishna is very, very glad to accept it. Nothing else matters.
You mentioned that the spiritual master should be taken as one's worshipable deity. You know, at least on two occasions this is mentioned, on one time by one of the Navyogendras also. So I would like to understand, what does it mean to take the spiritual master as a worshipable deity?
Hare Krishna. The supreme worshipable deity is Krishna, and the spiritual master acts as the representative of Krishna. So we can also offer our service to him, offer our worship to him. But he does not accept the service and worship for himself, but he passes it on to Krishna. Srila Prabhupada gave the example that the viceroy used to receive all sorts of valuable presentations, but the viceroy knew that none of the presentations were meant for him. The presentations were meant for the king or queen, and he did not keep anything for himself. So whatever the disciple offers in terms of service or worship is offered by the spiritual master to Krishna through his spiritual master, through disciplic succession. But Lord Krishna actually wants us to worship his devotee. And he declares that one who claims to be my devotee is not my devotee. But one who is the devotee of my devotee, he is actually my devotee. So our ultimate purpose is to please Krishna, and Krishna is actually more pleased when we serve his devotee than when we try to serve him directly. Like, what can we offer Krishna? Krishna has everything. So Srila Prabhupada gave the example that, say, any rich man like Mr. Rockefeller, what can you give to Mr. Rockefeller? He has everything. But if you give a little sweet to his child, then he will be very pleased. So in the same way, what can we offer Krishna? But if we give a little service to our spiritual master and our spiritual master is pleased, then automatically Krishna will be pleased. Is that all right?
It's said in the Bhagavad Gita that it's a general etiquette that we should not offer any even verbal fight to the seniors. So to what extent we should take it? And who is considered a senior? Because we see that we are the junior, you know, everyone is senior, so...
Janarapi sunichena tararapi sahishnana manina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. Lord Chaitanya instructed that we should wear this verse around our neck. We should always consider ourselves very, very lowly. We should consider that we are the servant of the servant of the servants. We should consider that everyone is our Prabhu, everyone is our master. We should never consider that we are superior to anyone. And if we have this mentality, then there is no question of offending anyone, what to speak of giving anyone a verbal fight. Also, in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, in the first chapter, Arjuna was presenting the argument to Krishna why he should not fight in the battle. He said, "These grandfather Bhishma, my teacher Dronacharya, there are so many superiors who are here, we should not even offer them a verbal fight, what to speak of a physical fight." It is because through superior personalities we receive knowledge, whether it's mundane or spiritual knowledge. Even in the classroom, one has to show respect to the teacher and able to receive knowledge properly, what to speak of in spiritual life. And in spiritual life, knowledge comes by submissive inquiry, by asking nice questions, by hearing properly, and by service. So if one is arguing, then one cannot understand properly. And to take this understanding properly, we should consider that everyone is our Prabhu, everyone is our master. And if we have this mentality and understanding, then we can receive knowledge from anywhere and everywhere. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that the spiritual master, he considers that everyone is his spiritual master. A pure devotee thinks like this. He said, therefore, only a pure devotee can be Jagaguru. Because he is seeing Krishna in every living entity. He is seeing the hand of Krishna in every activity. And he is understanding that every situation that I am in It is due by the grace of Krishna, and he is trying to instruct me. He is trying to help me to remember him, to help me to serve him. So we have to understand that we should not offer a verbal fight to anyone, but at the same time we have to use discrimination in who we approach for knowledge. Such person has to be capable of actually providing it to us. We should not approach just anyone. But once we have identified such a person, then whatever they say we should accept humbly and we should not argue with them.
Maharaj, while executing the devotional service, always there is a very keen fight with the mind actually. We want to get rid of something and the eyes which I don't want to see, they see. And this is going on day to day. The worst thing I find is the excuse that mind gives is laziness. So, which is a really very serious hurdle in executing devotional service. And mind often tends to give reasons and tends to make us lazy in executing devotional service. How can we overcome this laziness?
Laziness means tamagun. The symptoms of tamagun: laziness, ignorance, sleep. So, but tadarajas tamo bhava kamalo bhadayas chaye. Chaite tairana vidham stitam sattve prasidati. By hearing Srimad Bhagavatam in the association of devotees and by serving a pure devotee of Krishna, one purifies the heart or Krishna. When we hear and chant, then Krishna from within, as the well-wishing friend of the devotee, purifies the heart of ignorance, of passion. So he comes to the mode of goodness, and from the mode of goodness he transcends all material considerations. So all of these things can be done just by devotional service. The Kumars advised that the desires are like waves. The material desires, or whatever the mind is saying, it's going on like waves. And the vairagis are trying to stop those waves of material influence. But they're not as successful, although they undergo so much effort, they're not as successful as the devotees who engage in the service of the lotus petal feet of Krishna. So that's the thing. Is that all right? There's a place where Prabhupada translates. What is it? I've forgotten which verse, but Prabhupada, maybe you remember, that the person whose mind has been enlivened by devotional service. He translates some two words like that. That the person whose mind has been enlivened by contact of devotional service to the Lord. So, sleep means no life. Laziness means no life. And devotional service means one becomes enlivened. So by contact of devotional service, we become enlivened. And enlivened is the opposite of lazy. Is that okay?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, please accept my humble obeisances. To remain in Krishna consciousness for whole life till our death, we have to develop a taste for hearing Krishna Katha. So how can we, till that period, means we develop that taste, how can we remain in Krishna consciousness? It is really very difficult.
The first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam describes the process by which we can develop taste. And the process is Sian Mahat Seveya Vipra. By serving the great souls who are free from vice, a great service is done. And by doing so, one develops taste for the message of Vasudeva. And the nature of the great soul is that he is very merciful. So even while serving the great soul, we get reciprocation. And by continuing to serve the great soul, we develop the qualities of the great soul. And one of the qualities, foremost quality, is taste for hearing and chanting about Krishna. So just serve Srila Prabhupada, serve the devotees. By their mercy, you'll get sufficient encouragement to continue, and gradually you'll develop taste more and more. Hare Krishna.
You reminded me of that verse, Evam Prasanna Manaso Bhagavad Bhakti Yoga.
Yeah.
One whose mind has been enlivened by devotional service. Evam Prasanna Manaso Bhagavad Bhakti Yoga.
Hare Krishna.
Hi.
I have one technical question, Maharaj. We were discussing in our class that regarding when a yogi actually becomes successful in attaining the platform of seeing Paramatma, is it that every yogi becomes a devotee, or is simply is in ecstasy seeing the Supreme Absolute in the form of Paramatma?
I seem to recall that Prabhupada instructed that those who, yogis, who see the Paramatma, they have a choice. They can serve the Paramatma, or they can try to merge with the Paramatma. If they serve, then they're devotees. If they try to merge, then they've failed.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, please accept my humble obeisances. Maharaj, how should we treat with devotees who have, for the time being, deviated from Krishna consciousness? At least for the time being, they are not in Krishna consciousness, because they are always fearful of approaching devotees.
If someone has fallen from the platform of Krishna consciousness, we should be nice to them and encourage them to continue. Srila Prabhupada commented that if someone is having difficulty and we think, oh, he's in Maya, I want to stay away from him. That is the mundane attitude. But if we think, oh, this devotee is having difficulty, let me help him, that is the Vaikuntha attitude. So we should develop the Vaikuntha attitude.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, please accept my humble voices. Maharaj, I always faced with the problem that while chanting at home, if I am not able to chant to the fullest extent, or if I am not able to chant in the morning, I tend to become irritant. I try to dominate, and it does not please my parents. So could you tell me how to please them?
If you don't chant in the morning and don't chant at home, then you become irritable?
Yeah.
Me too.
I mean to say in the morning, at the time of Brahma Murta.
Yeah, I mean to say the same thing. Especially those of us who are working, if we don't chant in the morning, then we're in anxiety. When will I finish my chanting? So, therefore, better to finish in the early morning hours. Of course, Prabhupada gave a formula that he followed when he was a grihastha, he said sometimes. Now, what was it? He would chant, because he knew that he would take prasadam, what, two or three times a day. So then he would chant so many rounds in the morning, and then four rounds, say eight rounds in the morning, and four rounds before lunch, and four rounds before dinner. In that way you finish 16 rounds. So somehow it has to come, because eating goes on.
You said that chanting is in ignorance. So how can we be
chanting
away from
is not in ignorance.
No, in the evening time is. Because one of my senior...
We're going to chant all night tonight, right?
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
Sometimes while doing devotional service, especially like this BTG collections and all, the ego keeps on building so much. Already we have got a very strong, and on that we are constructing again. So sometimes we feel that, oh, I should stop it. At least, like, again, who will fight with this ego? Devotional service is purifying, but while this type of purification, the ego is also building up. So sometimes we are in dilemma whether to do some devotional service or better to not do some certain activities which will increase our ego. Then who will fight with that ego again?
Well, if you are not able to deal with the false ego, then Krishna will help. Srila Prabhupada said that whatever you do, if you give the credit to Krishna, you'll be successful. And if you try to take the credit for yourself, there'll be so many difficulties. So if you wait long enough, the difficulties will come. And then your false ego will be smashed. Of course, if you give it up voluntarily, then you might not have to get the special mercy to have so many difficulties. But if you're sincerely trying to do service and you just can't help the fact that the false ego arises very prominently, then Krishna will help. He'll smash you, and then your false ego will be reduced.
If you're performing devotional activities and becoming egotistical, then we don't want to think about what would happen if you didn't perform devotional activities.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. There's one more technical question that we remember from class. We were discussing about Mayavadis and Brahmavadis. And the discussion was that the Mayavadis are envious, but the Brahmavadis know Bhagwan, but they are attracted to Brahman aspect more. So another point was raised is, do the Brahmavadis have the understanding that they are part and parcel of the Brahman?
The Brahmavadi is also a kind of Mayavadi. There are two species of Mayavadis. They're called Brahmavadis and Shunyavadis. The Shunyavadis are like the Buddhists. They think that ultimately everything is void. And the Brahmavadis think, no, everything is Brahma. But both of them are on the same, are in agreement that any form can't be absolute. So both of them dismiss the personality of Godhead as ultimately simply a imaginary projection or a temporary manifestation or another appearance of ignorance. So they're both Mayavadis.
Maharaj, a correlate to this was is that we were having this discussion in regards to the four Kumaras. And they were going to Vaikuntha to meet Lord Vishnu, Narayan. So that is when the question came up. So we were wondering that, first of all, how can they go to Vaikuntha if they do not know him as the absolute truth? And secondly, do they actually know that they are part and parcel?
The Kumaras are... of course, they're great sages, so they're attracted to the absolute truth, but they had an impersonal conception. But when they went as far as Vaikuntha and actually got the darshan of the personality of Godhead and smelled the tulsi from his lotus feet then their minds changed. Then they came. The same thing happened to Sukadev Goswami. He was also an impersonalist in the beginning, but his mind changed by hearing the pastimes of the Lord. The same thing happened to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and Prakashananda Saraswati. They were both first-class Mayavadis, and by getting the association of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, their minds changed. Therefore, Atmaramas Chamuniyo, that even the Atmaramas, or the self-realized Brahmavadis, can also become attracted by Krishna. Is that okay?
Urban life can be quite taxing. Even when you're performing a devotional service, who can claim that you don't get stressed out sometimes, you know, because of paucity of time, lack of time, being grihastha, you have some duties to perform for the temple, for the Guru Maharaj. There are legitimate demands by the family, and traveling from anywhere to anywhere takes 1 hour, and generally life is quite hellish in urban city, and there is no quality time, and I don't think any devotee can claim that, well, he's completely satisfied with this situation. You do get stressed out at times, you know, for whatever reasons, complex urban life. Can you suggest a solution from a devotee's point of view? What should a devotee do?
Go to the forest. Otherwise, get up early and spend quality time chanting and hearing. Come to the Punyatra. If you can come to the Punyatra, you can spare time. So you just have to make a priority to spare time, quality time, for hearing and chanting and associating with devotees. And if the atmosphere is not so conducive at home, you can come to the temple, you can bring the family to the temple, and make the time. Where there's a will, there's a way.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Maharaj, in the Shishtashtakta, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has said that while chanting, one should feel like he is lower than a blade of grass, and without expecting any honor from anybody else. But while looking at the practical side, in the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna tells Arjuna that for the respectable man, dishonor is worse than death. So these things, both of them, they seem to contradict each other. So what is the right position?
Yes. That means Krishna is trying to engage Arjuna in devotional service by every which argument. Appealing to every from every point of view. Bhagavad Gita is so nice that even Krishna says, you know, even if you think that the soul is born and it dies, still you have no reason to lament. The soul is eternal, why lament? Even if you think it's not eternal, why lament? So he's leaving no escape for Arjuna. Arjuna is built up of a show of so many arguments, and Krishna is smashing his arguments. So that you look at it from a material point of view, look at a spiritual point of view, look at it from the angle of Sankhya, look at it from yoga, look at it any way you like, you should fight. So that one argument he's giving, that you're a respectable person, and especially a Kshatriya. So for a respectable Kshatriya like you, dishonor is worse than death. Madanaratirichyate. So he's giving that argument. Yes. Prabhupada also used to do that. He knew our psychology. So sometimes he would speak so much that you're not this body, you're not white or black or thin or fat, you're not an Indian or American or Russian or this or that. But then sometimes he would say that you should do this, otherwise what's the use of being American? Or sometimes he would say that, and I'm almost looking back a little surprisingly, that Prabhupada was, you can say in one sense flattering us that you come from a great country and you're born of good families, and in so many ways Prabhupada would say, so you should do something wonderful for your country. So back in those days we would think, because we were antisocial types, what is he talking about the country for? Who cares about the country? And who cares about being American and so on? But over the years and looking back, one can realize how deep-rooted this false identification is. That still, after 30 or 50 years, one will think, yes, but still I'm American. Or still I'm a member of such and such family, or I've come from such and such background, or this or that. Prabhupada kept saying over and over again, you're not this body. And, you know, we're ready to go on to greater and greater topics, but we haven't understood that we're not this body. We're still thinking that, yes, I'm not this body, but. And we're keeping that, some bodily identification. We're keeping some bodily identification. So, still, even if I'm in this bodily concept of life, then some argument can be made on the bodily concept of life that then you should serve Krishna. Since you're Indian, and Krishna appeared in India, you should serve Krishna. Since you're American, America is the most advanced country in the world, you should serve Krishna. Somehow or other serve Krishna, that's all.
Maharaj,
last question.
Last question. Reading Bhagavatam at home, we have experience of reading last 20 years, and hearing Bhagavatam in temple, we are seeing the result of it, that those devotees who are in temple, particularly I'm seeing Radha Gopinath Mandir, or those people who are regularly going, whether they are Grastha or Brahmachari, by attending regular Bhagavatam, their life is completely changed in comparison to those people who are reading Bhagavatam just because they have to read Bhagavatam. There may be one condition in our life. Oh, we are counselors, so we must read. We must chant 16 rounds. We must follow 4 regulative principles. And we must read also. But reading at home is completely different than reading, means hearing Bhagavatam at temple. There is no comparison hearing at temple and reading at home. What to do if we, as Raghunath Prabhu said, we are not able to come and we are not able to do, means then we will remain like that throughout our life, or what, whether we will, there is any chance of making any progress?
There is truth to what you have said. Srila Prabhupada said that discussing Srimad Bhagavatam is more potent than reading oneself. And therefore he introduced the class. He could have introduced 1 hour of reading, but he introduced the class for discussion. Satam prasanga mamavirya samvida. Now you have mentioned that the householders that go to the temple and hear Srimad Bhagavatam completely change. Now, why some householders go to the temple and hear Srimad Bhagavatam and others don't? What are the others doing? And why are you in that category and not in this category? If one really is eager, he'll get up early and he'll attend the class. I mean, maybe if someone is, you know, has business or work or school, he might not be able to. But in some cases, one could if one made the effort. And it's a matter of desire. Like once, when Srila Prabhupada was in Gorakhpur especially, the devotees were sleeping during class, even during Srila Prabhupada's class. And after one class, one of the disciples approached Srila Prabhupada and said, "Srila Prabhupada, that was such a wonderful class." And Srila Prabhupada said, "Did you think so?" And he said, "Yes." Then Srila Prabhupada said, "Well, what did the other devotees think?" And the first disciple replied, "Well, frankly speaking, Srila Prabhupada, most of the other devotees were sleeping during class." And Srila Prabhupada replied, "Yes, I know. Practically, I'm speaking just for a few sincere students." Then a few days later, in the morning class, most of the devotees were dozing. And Srila Prabhupada, he like exhibited such a lion-like burst of ferocity in preaching that we had to wake up. We had to wake up. And then Srila Prabhupada raised the question, "Why do you sleep during class?" So one disciple said, "Of course, we were traveling and preaching and staying in different householders' homes." So he said, "Well," one disciple said, "Well, we eat too much at night." Someone else said, "We stay up too late. We don't get enough sleep at night." Different disciples gave different answers. And Srila Prabhupada said that even if you don't eat at night, and even if you take sufficient rest at night, still you'll sleep during class. Then what is the solution? Srila Prabhupada said the solution is that you have to think that Krishna consciousness is so important that I cannot waste one moment outside of Krishna consciousness. Then you will stay awake. So when we have that mood, we'll make it to the temple for the class. And our lives will become glorious. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. We hear this sentence very frequently that the material energy helps materialistic to keep him illusioned, and for a devotee the material energy helps him to take him near to Krishna. So what is the exact way or what is the exact meaning of this sentence that the material energy helps the devotee to take him to Krishna? Is it that it creates more maya so that he can chant more sincerely? Or how is the way or the material energy helps a devotee to bring it near to Krishna?
Srila Prabhupada explains that we and maya have the same business. To induce the conditioned souls to surrender to Krishna. But our method is by preaching, and her method is by kicking. We humbly request the living entities, please surrender to Krishna. Please chant Hare Krishna. Please associate with Krishna's devotees. And Maya kicks the conditioned souls, and she keeps kicking and kicking and kicking until they surrender to Krishna and chant Hare Krishna and associate with devotees. So Srila Prabhupada said that our business and Maya's business are the same. But her method is different and our method is different. So a devotee who still has material attachments may also be subject to being kicked by Maya. But being kicked by Maya is taken as an impetus by the devotee to surrender more quickly to Krishna or more sincerely to Krishna.
Very often we have heard that the goal of life is to go back home, back to Godhead. And at the same time, in a number of pravachans, we talk about, I mean, it's been said that we don't think about going back home, back to Godhead. Our whole focus and concentration should be on chanting and other aspects of devotional service we should sort of work on. So doesn't this sort of... how do you understand this in the sense that, of course, at the back of our mind, we know about going back home, back to God, it is what we aspire for. At the same time, when we do that, we should not think about that. So how do we...
In one conversation, one disciple said to Srila Prabhupada that actually... we only aspire for pure devotional service, and that doesn't going back home, back to Godhead, just mean engaging in pure devotional service to Krishna? And Srila Prabhupada said yes. So in the highest sense, going back to Godhead means engaging wholly and solely in devotional service to Sri Krishna. And in that sense, we can go back to Godhead or be back to Godhead even in the same life and even in the same body. So what you said is true, that as in another case, Srila Prabhupada said that we shouldn't worry about going back to Godhead, we should just worry about spreading Krishna consciousness. But sometimes we worry about things that we really don't need to worry about. But even if we're worried about going back to Godhead, or even if we're worried about material necessities, we should have faith that just by engaging in devotional service to Krishna, Krishna will take care of us and our needs without separate endeavor. So we should have faith in Krishna and in the process of devotional service. That just by engaging in devotional service, we'll get the results of every other activity. We'll get the results of karma yoga, we'll get the results of jnana yoga, and we will go back to Godhead. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. Hare Krishna Maharaj. It is said that not a blade of grass moves without Krishna's will. So is it that when a person comes to devotional life, it is by the will of Krishna, and that we are destined to come to devotional life, and some persons are not destined to come to devotional life?
Well, definitely it is the will of Krishna that we come to devotional service. But it is the will of Krishna that everyone comes to devotional service. His Holiness Srila Radhanath Swami Maharaj Ki Jai. Actual question about the will of Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Maharaj, the question is that it is said that not a blade of grass moves without Krishna's will. And we see that some persons are in devotional life and some persons are not. So is it our destiny to be in devotional life, and it is the other person's destiny to be not in devotional life?
It is the will of Krishna that everyone engages in devotional service. We are all parts and parcels of Krishna, and it is our natural function to serve Him. And unless we do serve Him, we cannot be happy. And Krishna, as the Supreme Father, wants all of His children to be happy in devotional service. But we also have free will, and we can choose either to serve Krishna or to serve Maya. If Krishna was controlling every movement of every living entity, why would He come and preach Bhagavad Gita? He comes and preaches Bhagavad Gita to encourage us to make the right choice to serve Him. And at the end of speaking Bhagavad Gita, He tells Arjuna that whatever you like, you can do. Itechasi tatakuru. Now you have heard whatever I have said. Now whatever you like, you can do. So Krishna does not interfere with the minute independence of the living entities. He preaches because He wants us to engage in devotional service and be happy. But He doesn't force. Force does not act. So He gives us the choice. He gives us good instructions. He comes personally. He sends His son. He sends His representatives. He sends His servants to preach the same message of Bhagavad Gita and help us to make the proper decision to surrender to Him and engage in devotional service. I think the proper rendering would be that not a blade of grass moves without the sanction of the Lord. But Srila Prabhupada explains that if someone is really determined to do something, even against the will of the Lord, but if the person insists, the Lord will give His sanction reluctantly. Just like if someone wants to leave Krishna consciousness, we, you know, on behalf of Krishna, will try to convince the person to continue in devotional service. But ultimately, if the person is so determined to leave, well, we can't keep him by force. So reluctantly, we will give our sanction. Well, all right, you do whatever you like. We can't do anything more for you. So there are so many things going on in the world that Krishna does not want. So many murders, killing of cows, and all sorts of sinful activities. So we can't say that it is the will of Krishna that I've murdered a man, or I've killed a cow, or whatever. But because I'm determined, you know, I'm hell-bent on doing it, then ultimately Krishna in the heart gives sanction reluctantly. Okay, you're so insistent, you do it, but you suffer the consequences. So He gives reluctant sanction, not willing sanction.
In this earth, when we you say after achieving 100% devotion, we can go back to Godhead. So suppose if the devotion is not completed and the soul leaves the body, then and it goes to, if it takes birth in a higher planet, can it continue the devotional service? Or there it just enjoys the fruits of its karma and comes back to this material world? Or to achieve 100% devotion, it keeps on taking birth in on this earth, in this material world.
Okay, but I'm going to announce that Because you're asking in pursuance of another answer, I will answer further, but then fairness will prevail. Bhagavad Gita explains that whatever advancement we make on the path of devotional service is not lost. And we continue in the next life from the same point where we left off in the past life. So if I've completed, say, 50% in the present life, then in the next life, I'll start from 51%. Now, according to my advancement, I will take birth either on a heavenly planet or again on the earth planet in a pious family or aristocratic family or even a devotee's family. And Srila Prabhupada explains that the best is to take birth in a devotee's family or in a pious aristocratic family on earth. Those who are more advanced get that birth. And those who have made less advancement, they take birth on a heavenly planet. But either taking birth on earth or in a heavenly planet, one is given the opportunity to make further progress on the path of devotional service. But again, because we do have minute independence, there's always a chance, taking birth on a heavenly planet, that we may forget Krishna to some extent and become engaged in material enjoyment. And even on the earth planet, there's a chance that we can forget Krishna to some extent and try to enjoy material life. But the idea is that when one has made progress in devotional service but just has not been completely successful, then in the next life he'll take birth, as I mentioned, in a congenial situation. And naturally, automatically, he'll be attracted to the principles of devotional service and he'll make further progress. And we see practically in the Krishna consciousness movement, some devotees join and obviously they've made progress in the past life because very naturally, very easily, and very quickly, they show a taste for hearing and chanting about Krishna and rendering devotional service. So Srila Rupa Goswami explains that devotional service is a continuous process from the past life to the next life. And generally, someone who has taken to devotional service had previous association with devotional service in the past life. But for some reason, he could not be completely successful. And Srila Rupa Goswami says, generally, the reason is because of committing offenses against a Vaishnava or against Vaishnavas, one has not been able to be completely successful. So in the present life, he gets a good second chance. And Srila Rupa Goswami says that for persons who have a natural taste for hearing and chanting about Krishna, we can definitely conclude that in the past life they had made some progress in Krishna consciousness. So whatever we do is never lost. But at the same time, we should be very careful and try to achieve complete success in the present life. Because as His Holiness Sridhar Swami Maharaj said in one class, if you take birth on a heavenly planet, the duration of life there is so long, but by the time you come back to the earth planet, the golden age of Kali will be over. And the whole situation here will be completely hellish. So we should really be careful and, you know, be serious enough about Krishna consciousness and pure enough in our motives that we don't go to a heavenly planet and pass the whole golden age of Kali Yuga there. We should We should make every effort to be completely successful in the present life.
Saying in your lectures, the whole crux of our Krishna consciousness movement is depending upon creating healthy Vaishnava relationships between the devotees. Now, these relationships that we talk about are naturally spiritual, but at what point of time could we make out, of how do we make out that a particular relationship from spiritual is becoming material, and then you stop associating with that particular devotee?
What is in the service of the Lord is spiritual. What is for our sense gratification is material. If our relationship is centered around material enjoyment, sense gratification, if Krishna is not in the center of our pursuits, then that is a material relationship. We may want to serve a devotee even by helping that devotee on a physical platform or on a social platform. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when the devotees would come to Jagannath Puri, he would very carefully serve all of their physical needs. He would personally arrange accommodations. But it was all with Krishna in the center. It was all for the purpose of making them comfortably situated so that they could worship Lord Jagannath to their heart's content. Krishna should be our motivating goal and purpose in our relationships. If it is not, if Krishna is not being served through the relationships with Vaishnavas, or the spiritual master's mission is not being pursued, then we should know it is a material relationship. When the devotees would be coming to Jagannath Puri each year, Lord Chaitanya and the Puri devotees were so much eager to welcome them. There was such an eagerness of hearts. But in being together, they understood they would be hearing about Krishna together, chanting about Krishna together, dancing in kirtan together, worshipping Jagannath together. So they were so eager to be with one another. When the devotees would come, one year, the husbands, the wives, the whole families of all of the devotees of Bengal were traveling together to Jagannath Puri, led by Advaitacharya. When they came to a place called Kamalapur, they saw the flag above the chakra on the Jagannath temple. They became so blissful that they were approaching Jagannath Puri. They bowed down with such love and affection. In fact, as they were traveling to Puri, all the way from Navadweep and Santipur, the whole time they were having kirtan together. And all the people of all the villages, towns, and cities that they passed became attracted to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement. People were attaining love of God and even joining them just by seeing the kirtan procession of the devotees to Puri. Advaitacharya sent a messenger to Lord Chaitanya that he was arriving. When they came to Ataranala, which is a famous bridge just in the outskirts of Puri, which you will see during the yatra, Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was so pleased that
he and his associates all came to meet the devotees from Bengal. When the devotees saw each other, first Lord Chaitanya offered his prostrated obeisances to Advaitacharya. Advaitacharya offered his prostrated obeisances to Lord Chaitanya. They began to embrace in ecstatic love. All the devotees began to offer their obeisances to Advaita from the Orissa side and to Lord Chaitanya from the Bengali side. Then they all started offering obeisances to each other. All these hundreds and hundreds of devotees were just going to each and every one of the other devotees from the other camp. They were prostrating themselves, repeated obeisances to each devotee and embracing. Lord Chaitanya came with garlands for each and every devotee and personally put them on their necks with his own hands. Then he decorated each devotee's limbs with sandalwood pulp, all the Mahaprasad of Lord Jagannath. Then the two kirtans came together into one, which was so full of joy and love. They went to Narendra Sarovar to worship the wonderful boat festival of Sri Govinda, Krishna and Balaram. Then Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally arranged just suitable accommodations for each person. He would arrange a servant for the different devotees, and he would arrange bathing facilities. But it was all centered around Krishna, worship of Krishna, the congregational chanting of Krishna's holy names. So we should always keep Krishna in the center of our relationships. It's not that because someone is wearing a kanti mala, if I go to the cinema with them, that is Vaishnav Sangam. That is Kali Sangam. It is not that because this person has an initiated spiritual name and is wearing tilak, we can go to the restaurant or hotel and just eat anything for our sense gratification together. That is not association of devotees. Association of devotees specifically means with Krishna in the center, with Krishna's will and Krishna's service as the purpose of our coming together. So we want to encourage devotees. We understand each devotee's body is a sacred temple. Each devotee's mind is a sacred temple. So we want to encourage devotees' minds. We want to encourage devotees' bodies. On every level, we want to serve a Vaishnav to help them to serve Krishna. Sense gratification is material, and service to the Lord is spiritual. We should always very consciously maintain the spiritual sanctity of our Vaishnava relationships.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna Maharaj. Maharaj, when I was listening to the Krishna book which was being read yesterday, it talks about Krishna showing his wide open mouth to Yashoda Mata. And that Prabhupada comments that first after opening the mouth she sees the entire universe, and later the Krishna envelops her with the Yoga Maya potency, and that's why she regains that love for Krishna as her son. So I wanted to ask that this Yoga Maya seems to be only in Goloka, is it? Is in Vaikuntha planets where Vishnu forms are there, is only where Yoga Maya is not there, is it? I want to ask that.
Yoga Maya is the energy of the Lord that serves the Lord by facilitating wonderful, wonderful arrangements for his transcendental pastimes with his devotees. That particular type of yoga maya, where Krishna's Aishwarya, or his opulences as the supreme all-powerful personality of Godhead, are covered by his Madhurya Ras, or his very sweet, intimate, loving features, is unique in Goloka Vrindavan. And wherever that mood of Goloka Vrindavan is being practiced by the devotees, Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu especially came to teach us how to love Krishna in the mood of the residents of Vrindavan. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Prabhuji, Maharaj, I have got two questions. I don't know whether one only. I have often read that everything emanates from Krishna, even greed, anger, lust, everything. Then on the other hand, they say Krishna is nirguna. He is above three modes of material nature. How could it be?
Krishna is nirguna, which means he is beyond the material modes of nature. But he creates the material modes of nature. Just like the king creates the laws of the land. Whatever the king wants becomes the law of the land, but the king himself is beyond the law of the land. So yes, Krishna creates the material manifestation. He creates the three modes of nature, but he's beyond them. Just like one, actually the first time I came to the temple and met Srila Prabhupada, one boy in the audience asked that everything comes from Krishna. So Maya also comes from Krishna. So how can Maya cover Krishna? Srila Prabhupada replied that everything in the universe comes from the sun. The cloud also comes from the sun. But the cloud covers the sun. But actually the cloud does not cover the sun. The sun is beyond the cloud. But the cloud covers our vision of the sun.
Thank you. Hare Krishna Maharaj. Actually, Prabhupada refers that how by watering the root, the all the other parts of the plant are nourished automatically. So how by maybe just few devotees who consider Krishna as the Supreme Lord, they worship, and the majority of the population, maybe you may say that they are atheists or demons. So how by serving Krishna by few people can satisfy all the other population? We are all the parts of Krishna. So how it is being done naturally?
Does everyone hear this question? He is asking that it is said in Srimad Bhagavatam that serving Lord Krishna is watering the root of the tree. And the whole existence, all living entities, are the various parts of the tree compared to the leaves, fruits, twigs, flowers, and so on. So if we please Krishna, why is it that all living entities in creation are not satisfied by our service? In fact, sometimes when you serve Krishna, by the process of serving Krishna, we cause dissatisfaction to people. Some of you may have this experience with your mother and fathers, that when you surrender to Krishna, it creates greater distress than they may have ever experienced in their life. And Prahlad Maharaj, when he surrendered to Krishna, Hiranyakashipu was not satisfied. He was terribly disturbed. How is it that Bhagavatam explains that by watering the root of the tree or serving Krishna, everyone is satisfied? That is your question? Everyone is satisfied. However, they do not understand that they are satisfied. Every living entity is part and parcel of Krishna. When you satisfy the whole, you naturally satisfy every part of the whole. So the spirit soul in every living entity is very jubilant when you serve Krishna, when Krishna is pleased. However, those persons who are under the illusion of Maya and have forgotten how we are satisfying their soul, because they are seeking their enjoyment through the misconceptions of their conditioned minds. Actually, by Prahlad Maharaj's surrender to Krishna, Hiranyakashipu was getting great satisfaction in his soul. But because he was so attached to his misconceptions, he did not understand. Does that answer your question? So we should always try to please Krishna. And know by doing that, we are doing the ultimate best service to every living entity on the spiritual platform.
At the same time, until unless those other living entities, they take to Krishna consciousness, how directly they could get the benefit of other living entities serving the Krishna?
Until they take to Krishna consciousness, they do not realize the benefit. As a devotee, you should understand, by pleasing Krishna, you are doing the best possible service to everyone, whether they know it or not. When a devotee is non-envious, the devotees find the greatest joy seeing another person pleasing Krishna, seeing another person getting the mercy of Krishna. However, materialistic people, when they see someone getting the mercy of Krishna, they become very sad because they cannot understand the nature of that mercy. You can only come to Krishna consciousness by the mercy of Krishna. How many people have you put into distress by coming to Krishna consciousness?
My very near relatives, doesn't to speak.
Your very near relatives. That is all. Your very near relatives are all relative. And their distress is also relative. However, on the absolute platform, you are satisfying their souls. But they do not understand.
Actually, until unless we also understand, it also hinders. I may not be executing the other type of service which they
first
are expecting.
First we must understand by hearing from Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. By practicing, gradually we realize how Krishna is the source of everything, how he is the root of all existence, how by pleasing him we are doing the best pass, we are showing the highest love to every living being, including our nearest relatives.
Maharaj, sometimes due to the tricks of Maya, we may find faults in other devotees or something what they do may displease us, but still they are serving the glorious mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So sometimes it may be painful to our hearts, but we still want to glorify them. So how can we glorify them?
Giriraj Maharaj, His Holiness, is changing the sequence. And since I did not listen to your question because I thought he was going to answer, because he is ordering me to answer, and I am aspiring to be his obedient servant, I request you to ask again.
Sometimes due to the tricks of Maya and due to our false pride, we may find faults or cause offenses towards the devotees, but we still know that they are serving the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, so we don't want to offend them. So for our, how can for the purification of our own hearts we can glorify them?
To glorify devotees is to glorify Krishna. To find fault in devotee is to find fault in Krishna. This is Krishna's interpretation. Krishna's greatest joy is when those he loves are honored. And Krishna's greatest dissatisfaction is when those who he loves are put into distress, or who are criticized. It should be our austerity. We were speaking on Saturday morning about Raghunath Bhatta Goswami. When he would hear other devotees being criticized, he could not listen. It was impossible for him to listen. It was too painful to his heart, even if what they were saying was true about that person. The fact that that person was serving Krishna was so glorious that he did not want to hear anything else. Sometimes in preaching, as a matter of service to another, we made, or in order to protect another, we may have to speak about a discrepancy in another person. However, that is not to find fault. That is not for the reason of criticizing based on some sort of envy or ego. Srila Prabhupada would sometimes warn us to protect us in such a way that he would point out certain defects in another that we have to be careful not to be contaminated by. But that was in a mood of compassion. That was not in the mood of fault finding. However, if we unnecessarily find faults with others, even if they are true, it will be the cause of our fall down. We must understand this very clearly. The scriptures again and again warn us through so many stories and examples, so that we will perform the austerity of not finding faults with Vaishnavas, but seeing their good qualities and glorifying Vaishnavas. In Kuliagram, when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was forgiving all of those who had offended him and his devotees, one Brahmin approached him and told him, due to my ignorance, for so many times I have offended you and I have blasphemed your devotees. What should I do? Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu replied that criticizing a Vaishnav is equal to drinking poison. If you drink poison, the result is you will become diseased and you will die. Similarly, when we criticize devotees, it creates a diseased condition in our spiritual life and ultimately causes death, in the sense that Krishna withdraws his mercy and we lose our enthusiasm for devotional service, which is like spiritual death. Lord Chaitanya explained that if you drink poison, there is only one way to reverse the effects, and that is by drinking nectar. The drinking of nectar will neutralize all the effects of the poison. And the nectar is to glorify devotees. With the same mouth that you have drunk the poison of fault finding, you have to drink the nectar of glorifying the Vaishnavas. This should be done in the beginning as an austerity. Srila Rupa Goswami has said that one of the symptoms of a pure devotee is that that person has no tendency within his or her heart to find faults in others. We are not pure devotees. We have so many tendencies to find faults with others. That is the tendency of our false ego, directly the false ego. We have tendencies toward lusty activities. We have tendency toward angry activities. Sometimes we have tendency to kill people when we're angry with them. We have so many terrible tendencies, and one of them is to find faults with Vaishnavas. Human behavior is meant to accept what's favorable for devotional service and reject what is unfavorable. What is favorable for devotional service is to drink the nectar of the glorification of Vaishnavas. What is unfavorable for devotional service is to criticize devotees unnecessarily. Some devotees, if they can prove that it's true, they justify that it is all right that I have criticized. However, as far as Krishna is concerned, whether it is true or false makes very little difference. Even if a devotee has some defect, the fact that that person is trying to serve Krishna makes that person glorious in the eyes of Krishna. And it will become the cause of the ruination of our own spiritual lives to criticize. We must, as an austerity, as a regulative principle, we should actually consider it like a regulative principle not to unnecessarily find faults with other devotees. You may have a tendency for illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, and meat eating, but you say no to those things because it is a regulative principle. The first offense to the holy name is to criticize Vaishnavas, to blaspheme Vaishnavas. So we should treat this as a regulative principle and try to always honor and respect. Amanina manadena. Offer all respects to others and expect none in return. In this way, Krishna will be pleased and he will give us the power to chant his holy names constantly. Is not to have full faith in the chanting of the holy names and to maintain material attachments even in spite of hearing so many instructions on the matter, even in spite of understanding so many instructions on the matter. Elsewhere the tenth offense is translated as being inattentive while chanting. If we have full faith in the holy name, that the holy name is Krishna, and that Krishna will provide whatever we need and do whatever needs to be done, then we can wholeheartedly chant the holy name. But if we're in the bodily concept of life, thinking this is my wife, these are my children, or this is my husband, this is my house, these are my friends, these are my enemies, these are my problems, then while we're chanting, we will think that, you know, we have to do something about our friends, about our enemies, about our problems, about our assets. And we will not be able to concentrate on the holy name. But if we really have faith in the holy name of Krishna, even if we have material attachments, but if we're not attached to our attachments, if we're trying to become more attached to Krishna and detached from material things, and we chant the holy name in the mood of service to Krishna, in the mood of purification, becoming free from attachments, with full attention, then the material attachments will become weakened. And eventually the attachment for Krishna will become stronger than the attachment for material things. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that anartha and avidya, anartha means unwanted things, and avidya means ignorance. They're like mist and clouds. And the holy name is like the sun. So because of anartha and ignorance, when we chant the holy name, we don't get the full benefit. The holy name is covered to some extent. But mist and clouds are eradicated or evaporated by the sun according to the intensity of the sun. So if we chant with attention, that is like intense sun, and that will very quickly burn up the fog and clouds of ignorance and anarthas. But if we chant inattentively, then it's like the sun is not very bright. The heat of the sun is not very intense, and therefore the fog and the clouds will continue. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that attentive chanting
can eradicate all the other offenses, anarthas, and avidya. Whereas inattentive chanting will allow anarthas and avidya to continue. So we, you know, with full faith in Krishna, full faith in the holy name of Krishna, we should surrender to the process of chanting and not worry about anything else. And have faith that whatever else needs to be done, Krishna will do it. This time is meant for Krishna. I have the rest of the day if I want to worry about other things, but at least during chanting time, I should fully absorb myself in Krishna and have faith that Krishna will give me the intelligence to deal with the other things when the time comes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Maharaj has said that preaching is the best service you can offer to Lord Krishna. But it's also said that at least in the initial stages, the neophyte stages, you shouldn't preach to atheists and non-devotees. So, I mean, in the beginning you are so enthusiastic that you want to preach it to whoever you come across. But, I mean, what do you do about it? And the second question is, it said that you can start...
You should preach. Srila Prabhupada encouraged us to preach whatever we know to as many people as we can. It is not that we should not preach to non-devotees. We should not preach to people who are blasphemous and antagonistic. If in your preaching you find that whatever you tell someone, they are blaspheming, criticizing, and becoming more envious, then we should not continue to preach to that person. It is like Prabhupada explains, feeding milk and bananas to a serpent. However, for someone who is innocent, who is not a devotee, we should be enthusiastic to preach, even at the very beginning. It is not that you have to present yourself as a great pundit and a paramahamsa. We should all be completely honest in our preaching. You should tell them that I don't know so much, but I know Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God, because he possesses all the opulences. And you also, you're not this body, but you are the eternal soul. And I'll share with you nice examples to prove this scientific fact. If you just chant Hare Krishna, you will realize the eternal nature of the soul. If you take this prasad, it will also be very nice. And if you take this book, then you'll know everything. Whoever you meet, you should be anxious to share this message with them. And if they ask you a difficult question, what is the chronological order of the 14 Manus? You should say, it is all in these books. Please buy this book. So you be honest, and whatever you know, you tell. If they ask a question, say, well, the other devotees know. I cannot answer this question. If you come to our temple, there are other people who can answer this question. But I just want to say that since chanting Hare Krishna and understanding these teachings, I have found great happiness and meaning in my life. And the more I learn, the more happy I become.
please tell everyone and anyone. Hare Krishna. In preaching, we become purified. The more we try to give the message of Krishna to others, the more Krishna will reciprocate by giving us more spiritual power to share. In fact, how long have you been in the association of devotees? You can just say, I can hear. How long have you been in association of devotees? Three years and 2 months. She has known devotees for 3 years and 2 months. At the beginning of our movement, devotees who knew Prabhupada for 2 months were sent to cities that never heard of Krishna to start temples. And preach and make the whole city Krishna conscious. They just repeated whatever they could remember from Prabhupada. They did not invent anything. They didn't try to take a higher position than they were in. They just wanted to deliver whatever they heard and whatever they could remember. As it is, you find the more you try to preach, the more attentive you'll be in classes, the more attentive you'll be when you read Srila Prabhupada's books, because you'll understand it's not just for myself that I'm learning, but the more I understand of Srila Prabhupada's teachings, the more I can help others. In every sense, we should all try to preach.
Actually, my question is for Radhanath Maharaj, because you answered a question just before Prasad regarding spiritual and material relations. I am a businessman and I have to cheat the government and my clients also to perform my business activities. So previously I used to make money by doing business for sense gratification, but now for the last few years my thinking is in such a way that the more I make money, I can more utilize it in spreading Krishna consciousness. So my question is, now the relationship with my clients are material or spiritual? And other way around, is my business an activity which is material and spiritual? And if the answer to this is a spiritual activity or a spiritual relationship, how do I convince to the people that even though I am cheating, it is a spiritual activity?
Are you sure you don't want to ask Giriraj Maharaj?
Giriraj Maharaj can also answer.
Don't cheat him. I know it's spiritual cheating, but don't cheat him.
But it is the reaction of cheating that you have to be cheated. It depends specifically on what you are doing. It is very difficult to answer this question in a general way. To what extent and how you are cheating them very much determines the response to this question. So I would say that this question is something that has to be discussed in a very specific way. What are you doing? What are you saying? Are you violating the principles of morality? Are you unnecessarily lying? This is a question that has to be dealt with very specifically, and I do not think it is to the interest of all these thousands of people to hear about your specific cheating propensities. We can discuss it in Radha Gopinath Temple in my room if you like. But as a general principle, we should be as straightforward, as honest as possible. We should not violate the principles of morality. However, Srila Prabhupada explains, just for survival and business, sometimes you may have to say, for you I make no profit. But actually you're making profit. So that is a necessity, because everyone else is saying, so you have to say. But that is something quite innocent. If we may speak something that is not absolutely accurate, in an innocent way, not to harm another, not for your own material purposes, but because it is for the survival of your occupation, and then you utilize the fruits of that in the service of Krishna, that is Krishna consciousness. However, we must be very, very careful not to abuse or misuse this idea. And many devotees do. They abuse and misuse this ideal and think they can say anything to anyone at any time because they're devotees. However, you have to suffer the reaction. What we have found, Srila Prabhupada gave us a very simple, innocent, and intelligent philosophy of transcendental trickery. So innocent, Srila Prabhupada said, when the child is suffering a disease and the child does not want to take the medicine because it does not taste good, then the mother will put the medicine inside of a laddu and say, please eat this laddu. And the child says, is it medicine? And she says, no, it is a laddu. If she says yes, he won't eat it. So the mother is, in one sense, telling a lie. But in another sense, she's not doing it for her own sense gratification. She's not doing it to harm the child. She's doing it as in an emergency situation because it's the only way to save the child. It is done in a spirit of compassion. And Srila Prabhupada told, when we are selling his books, we may tell them something. He told us we should try to sell the books on the basis of the book as honestly as possible. But what happened is, when devotees took this concept of transcendental trickery that Prabhupada so innocently explained to us as a way of showing compassion to others, took it to such an extreme that you can say anything to anyone at any time without consideration of honesty or truth or straightforwardness, just to somehow or other get the results. And devotees became so addicted to speaking this way with others that when they would come back to the temple, they were accustomed that I can just say anything to anyone to fulfill my particular motive. They would start lying and doing so-called transcendental trickery to each other. The result is no devotees could trust each other anymore. And this breaks down the whole fabric of love and trust, because as you treat the conditioned souls, you'll also naturally treat devotees the same way eventually. So if you want my
humble suggestion, in general, unless it is a very emergency situation done with great caution and really understanding that we have the proper motivation, we should simply be straightforward and honest in our dealings and leave the results to Krishna. Ultimately, we should not be penny wise and pounds foolish. You may want to get a little money from someone by cheating them and then give it to Krishna. And you may get a little money and give it to Krishna. That's a few pennies. But if in the long run, everyone around understands that you're a devotee and you're a cheater, then how is that helping the Hare Krishna movement? If everyone in your town and your village, everyone you know thinks Hare Krishnas are liars and cheaters. Srila Prabhupada wanted a movement of integrity. Srila Prabhupada said, you can understand my devotees because they are gentlemen. Srila Prabhupada said, Rupa Goswami explains, even in the most ordinary dealings, the devotee should be straightforward. Let us just be honest and know that if we're trying to do the best we can for the service of Krishna, Krishna will help us. And in an emergency situation, to really somehow or other save a person from going to hell and wasting their human form of life, in that mood of compassion, we may use transcendental trickery.